All right, welcome to the first of its kind, world-changing manufacturers network. Lisa Ryan has her ears to the ground and her heart in the game. Get ongoing education and new connections right here with Lisa and the manufacturers network. Buckle your seat, listen, and spread the word. Here's Lisa.
Hey, it's Lisa Ryan. Welcome to the Manufacturers Network podcast. I'm excited to introduce our guest today, Eknath Prasad. Eknath is a Marine and CEO of Ioka Systems, a made-in-the-USA custom software development company that specializes in helping leaders in manufacturing and other industries with complex operations solve their business problems using technology. He's an AI enthusiast and patent holder who teaches about how to leverage artificial intelligence for business growth. So, Eknath, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Lisa. Thanks for having me. Good to see you.
So share with us a little bit about your background and what led you to doing what you do.
I'll tell you, the funniest thing is I ran away from software for many years because I just got tired of coding. There's a sense of humor out there that kind of brought me into this field. So I started doing software, and then I decided to move into civil engineering because I like building things in construction and project management. But then I wound up actually being pulled back into it and doing my master's degree in it. So the weird thing, I took this weird journey of trying to avoid software, then being brought back into it, and then later on founded this company, Ioka Systems. And so a big deal for us is made in USA software development. So all of our employees are here. We're in Texas because Texas is amazing. And this is, it's a big deal for me to get going here within this type of company and in this industry.
Yeah, it's so fascinating because I know that as AI has taken over the world, I know it's been around for a long time, but as far as the normal common folk like me, who has recently just become an AI super user, I know that whatever we talk about today is going to be probably completely changed 3 months from now. But we're going to focus today on manufacturing and how they can best use AI to up-level their operations there. Right off the bat, what are you seeing as the number one missed opportunity for manufacturers when it comes to AI?
I think the interesting thing, that I'm going to roll back just for a moment here about AI, because you're absolutely right. It's been around for a bit. It's been around since, what, the 50s or so. It was trendy during the whole Star Wars program with the Reagan administration, and then it fell out of fashion. But much like I hope my clothing, it has come back into fashion now, and people are starting to use it for very practical business problems. But the question that we always get asked the most, and this is even outside of AI, is who should do what and when? I think to me that's like the most interesting thing that people do, because you think of it this way. You have your ERP or you have a forecasting system that tells you what your plan is, and then you've got an accounting system that's your rearview mirror that tells you what happened. But that icky middle ground of who should do what and when, that's the missed opportunity, I think, not just for software, but especially for AI. Because the reason why software hasn't really been able to fill that middle ground, the forecast to what happened in the past, the reason why software hasn't been able to fill that ground, traditional software, is that it's human intelligence that is often used to decide who should do what and when. And so now AI can be trained to emulate the decision-making of your best employees. And I think that's one of the things that you'd mentioned in your book about manufacturing engagement. You've got your best employees. You've got their way of thinking. Can we take that and train AI to be able to be that specialist, be that support person within your team to give you that advice on who should do what and when? AI is not going to take over your company, just like any specialist that you train to do something is not going to take over your firm, but it's going to guide you. It's going to advise you. It's going to be able to crunch numbers that you might not have the capacity to, and very importantly, give you consistent decision-making about who should do what and when. And that's the beauty of AI. And it is so much easier to train and work with AI than it is to do it the old fashioned way, right? Writing code to have lots of if-then statements. If this happens, then I do this. That gets to be really complicated to keep in your head. And that's why people have traditionally occupied that middle ground of who should do what and when. This is where AI comes in. It'll emulate that decision-making and it'll guide people as to what's the best avenue ahead to preserve those forecasts that they spent all of this time building in their initial, within their ERP or whatever forecasting tool that they're using.
It's interesting when you say that about taking your best employees that are out there. I also think that in manufacturing, we're of course seeing the graying of manufacturing as baby boomers are starting to leave in record numbers and all of this, which has also been going on for a long time. But it would also seem that it would give us a good way to almost create a legacy for those employees who have been with our company for 10, 20, 30 years. Because when they leave, number one, we either hire 5 or 6 people to take over what that one person was doing for the last 30 years, or we incorporate their legacy into some AI to preserve that. So am I hearing that right? Is that something that manufacturers would be able to do? And if so, what do you think?
I'm so excited you said that, Lisa. That's absolutely the case. So one of our favorite clients out in Victoria, Texas, they had observed exactly the same thing, right? And so what they do is they're working with a lot of pumps that clean sludge out from, you know, from oil refineries and other field sites. But their folks have lots of experience, right? Same thing, right? Graying the best people, mid-40s, 50s, they're really hitting their stride in terms of their capabilities and what they're doing. And so when Robbie said to me, we're looking for sustainability, at first I was curious, right? I was thinking, I know that y'all have certain chemicals and things that you use. Are you talking about sustainability that way? But what Robbie was saying was, he said, hey, my daughter is going to be CEO of this business. She's taking it over. And so what I want to be able to do is to take these sort of best practices that we have built over the years and take some of the thinking from our best employees and capture it somewhere. And so what we did in our software is we took some of those procedures and processes, put it in the software. And then now when a newer employee comes in, they're guided in terms of what information should I gather? What should I be looking at? What kind of things do I need to make a good decision in terms of scheduling, in terms of what equipment to bring out to the site, or what kind of activities would be able to drive their numbers and their forecast? And so ultimately, this company has dashboards on their walls where they can see throughout their company, you could see how are they doing relative to the forecast. So it comes back to that idea of, hey, we took a lot of time to build a plan, and how are we executing against the plan? And in the Marine Corps, the old saying is, no plan survives first contact with the enemy. And so there's a huge tactical element of decision making that has to happen once you start taking rounds or you start going under pressure. And the same sort of thing happens. If you can take a little bit of this decision making, you teach software, that's called the rules engine or the inference engine, right? You create this sort of rules based and inference engine. You're now modeling the thinking of folks. And it's actually a lot easier to do this than many people think, because you begin by looking at the information you have, the information that's already within your company. And then you start asking people about the decision making that they made. Hey, based on this, who should do this next activity? When should they do it? What's the order of events? And you start asking these questions, and it really becomes a fairly easy exercise of just tabulating that decision-making. And the coolest part about AI is you really just present it to the AI software. You just, and what it does is it observes your decision-making with this data, and it starts emulating it, and then it reaches convergence. And when it reaches convergence, you now feel really comfortable that your thinking is being carried out by the software, because you're teaching the software to think for itself.
The other thing that I really liked what you said at the beginning was about the sustainability part, because if we're going to change the conversation to be able to woo younger generations into manufacturing, millennials and Gen Z, sustainability is a huge part of it. And it's one of those words that they want to know that they're making a difference and that they're saving the planet at the same time. And if they have the old perceptions of manufacturing, they may not have that. I think that's a great way of looking at it, of bringing that into your business. Along this process, what are you seeing as some of the misunderstandings that maybe manufacturing leaders have about this kind of digital transformation?
Yeah, I think the biggest misunderstanding and concern, and it's a very rightful concern, is intellectual property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On my practices that I've worked so hard to develop and to build and to train my people on, are they going to be put out into something that I no longer control? Are my ideas going to be incorporated within AI outside of my building? And I can tell you, if you're using a large language model like ChatGPT, which is great for writing marketing pieces, it's great for just writing all sorts of stuff, and it can be fun to interact with as well. It gets better because it's a public model. So your information, when you use ChatGPT, does leave you. That's your, and so what you really want to be able to do is to build your AI within your building. And that's what we typically do. Most enterprises, number one, they don't want connections, too many connections coming from the outside world into their building. That's a security risk.
Right.
The second thing is that hard fought for intellectual property has to be maintained. That your data is essential. You're using it to train the model, but just do it on your network. Build your system in the building, do it on your network. And I'm going to nerd out just for a second and tell me if I'm going off the rails for a moment here. But the training, how you train the AI, takes different compute resources than how you actually use it to guide you and operate as like a specialist within your company, giving you suggestions on what to, on who should do what when. So when you build the system as a training model, what you do is you begin by taking your existing data, right? You go to your ERP, you go to your accounting system, you go to whatever you're using for scheduling or work assignments. You pull all of that back. Maybe you have an MRP or something. You pull all that data back, but you keep it on your network. And then you put it on computers that have, frankly, they have a lot of video cards, because it turns out video cards are really good at being at running AI systems that are getting trained. So what you do is you have your hardware, it's in your building, it's in your network, you have your AI software that's learning in your building under your control, and you're using your data. So now things stay within your building, your intellectual property is yours. And what you'll see is people, the goodness of people is actually that they are biased. That's a good thing about people, that they are biased, because what it does, it is their personality. It is their decision-making. It's how they see information that is almost unique to them. And so you take that sort of behavior and you're taking your best folks and their best thinking, and you're imprinting it on software, on your network, in your building. It doesn't go out to your competitors. And then you set your feedback loop in place. So as you encounter different scenarios, different data, different conditions, as you learn more, you can start to get that feedback loop going, but keep it all within your building. And I think, to me, that's the number one thing people are concerned with, is that if I'm dealing with AI, is this thing going to take all of my work and send it out to my competitors? Or is it going to go into some sort of a Skynet, which is going to turn on me at some point?
Yeah, no, just for clarification, though, because when I think of one of the benefits of me using ChatGPT for what I do, and it's primarily writing and marketing and that, all that kind of stuff, but I have the benefit of the entire universe of people putting that in, that ChatGPT is taking things from. But if the AI system is in-house, where does their AI start? Do they have the software benefits from all these other systems in their specific business, and now they're keeping the lid on that and they're adding to it as they manufacture? I'm trying to figure out, because you're not getting the same benefit, you're keeping it private, but you're not, where does it go to access that AI?
Yeah, so it's all living, you're right, it's living in your network. So the disadvantage is, I'll pick on a large language model, and I'll pick on that. We have one customer that they have a, they're in the trades, HVAC, appliance repair. And so there are certain things that they want to express to their customers, right? So if they want to sell more maintenance plans, for example, then the phrasing will, some phrasing will convert better than others. And really being able to guide their folks, their franchisees, on how to maybe write that email that will get people to schedule an appointment with you, things like that. They will actually put their large language model, make it public, and then it continues to get better and better, right? Because it is exposed. So that is the advantage of that. But most of what we're talking about here on the manufacturing side isn't so much the language model. It's more data driven. So it's numerical, it's mathematical, it's calculated. And so some of these here really wouldn't benefit by going outside, right? If someone came to me and asked me for advice on, say, reverse logistics or whatever, right? I could say a couple of things, but I'm not an expert, right? That's what I love about our customers. Our customers deeply know and love what they do. I've literally watched people come up, they tell me about what they build, and they can't help it, but their hands start caressing the machinery that they're on, right? So I can't bring that love to the table that they have. I can respect it, enjoy it, and it's addictive for me to be part of that. And our whole company is like that too. Our guys love to walk the shop floor with people and feel the things that people have an emotional connection to. But we, being the public, if you will, obviously we assign NDAs and things, but we being outsiders can't really do a whole lot with that information. And so there's not a lot of value that we can bring to say, hey, make your machinery this way instead of that way, right? But that's the thing, is when you have your AI model, because it's so data driven and it's so specific to the way you carry out your activities, there's really not a whole lot of value of exposing it to the public.
Okay. Oh, I got it. That makes sense. So it's the math model versus the English model.
Correct.
Okay.
And I would totally, I'll tell you this, I would love to have the English model out there as well. So that's great to be public. But even that you want to be careful of. And I can tell you that even on the code itself, right? You can go to ChatGPT right now and say, write me some code that'll convert euros to dollars. And you can say, it'll write it in Python. Then you can say, write it in C# and it'll generate code for you. It'll do little snippets for you. But you still want to be very careful, because if you're, number one, sometimes it comes back with the goofiest things ever.
Right. And then
we do not expose our customers' code. So if one of our guys felt like they needed help, like I said, we're a traditional office. Everybody's in the building. We try to get people to talk to one another. It's a weird thing. But if they do feel like they need to go out there, we're like, look, you got to strip out anything customer identifying, and you really got to abstract your thinking to a root problem you're trying to solve. But if I'll tell you this, by the time you abstract your thinking into a root problem that is not proprietary, not customer specific, you probably solve the problem by then anyway. It's just a good problem solving approach.
Yep. So if somebody's thinking about getting started with AI, what should manufacturing organizations do to get started?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to get started is you've got data already available, right? Like I would almost work my way backwards and say, hey, if this is what I'm invoicing on, and this is, I do this activity, I ship this out, and let me work my way backwards and say, okay, I'm invoicing based on, and I'll make this up, right? Like it could be numbers of units shipped to a particular customer, right? And so if they're invoicing based on that, they're going to work their way backwards from that data in their accounting system and start taking a look at that and saying, what are my more profitable engagements, right? What makes them really good? So start with the end in mind, start with your accounting system. That's really your record of truth in terms of how fruitful are your engagements with your customers. And then as you start working your way backwards, you say, okay, what kind of went into this decision-making? And then you start looking at the different systems that you're touching that will ultimately feed that decision-making that gets you toward that final point. And so you've got your ERP, you've got maybe some sort of resource planning MRP system. You've got a variety of tools within your shop. A lot of companies have great quality systems, and there's a lot of really good data that resides in those quality systems. And so you can start pulling back that data. And what I would first recommend someone get started with is take a look at what you have, take a look at the data you have, work your way backwards from your accounting system, and then start modeling and profiling your best jobs. What you're going to find is probably 20% of your jobs, sort of Pareto principle, right? 20% of your jobs produce 80% of your best revenue. And so now you can take a more constrained look instead of looking at everything, right? You start focusing on your best performing jobs. That data is the basis. That's your training data. And this is, once again, something that you're going to want to bring someone in to help you a little bit with this, right? Because they're going to set up the gear and they're going to set up the things for you. But the coolest thing is the magic is the data they already have. They're sitting on this mound of data about their customers, about their systems, about what they're building. Everyone has this data. And now it's time. We talked about this for years, right? Like how data is the new oil, right? This is the new awesome resource. We say this, but everyone's like, yeah, but I don't know what to do with it. I'm sitting on terabytes of data or gigabytes of data. I have no idea what to do with it. Now with AI, you can do something with it. And that's what's super exciting is you've already got the resources. Let's just begin.
Okay. So speaking of return on investment, what are some of the fastest areas for ROI when manufacturers are implementing this kind of new technology on the shop floor?
What we hear a lot is quality and consistency. And does that necessarily yield on that immediate bottom line? I'm not really sure, but I've found when we've talked to people, they less care about efficiency, if that makes sense. They care more about effectiveness. Right. And they want a tighter grouping around what they produce. And what that results in is maybe less rework, right? So a rework reduction might be a thing. It might be reducing scrap, because and that leans into the sustainability concept we talked about earlier. And so they have metrics all around. And so in my mind, I can only imagine an SPC chart, right? This statistical process control curve, and you've got the bell curve and you've got the tolerances in terms of what your quality is. And so those quality metrics, that's the number one thing that we hear about, that people really take so much pride in what they built. And what they don't want is they don't want that dissatisfaction from their client. They don't want to have to stop things from going out the door because in their, you know, quality or review, they found something that was a little off. And so that to me is what we hear a lot. The return on investment from there is simply just loyal customers. It's being able to plan and schedule better. It's being able to deal with just changes in what activities are happening. What we found is a lot of the operators want to have a plan. They come in, they have a game plan, they go to a particular station, and they're there to make it happen. And if something alters that plan and that mission, it makes them uncomfortable. So there is an employee satisfaction of knowing what's the mission, what am I doing, how is this being measured, how do I boast about what I've done if I have clarity, once I have clarity on those metrics and what I'm being measured on. And it's really not about them. It's about the thing that they're doing. There's a higher purpose to what they're doing. And it's about that thing. And that's really what AI will help pinpoint for people. And it does it in such a less exhausting way. And I don't, and Lisa, I've often struggled with this here because people look at AI and it's intimidating, right? You're teaching software to teach itself. And I can tell you, we, back in the day, because like I said, it's like in 98 is when I got my master's in AI, right? And so back then, we always contrasted like what they would call procedural code with artificial intelligence code. And so procedural code was often very logic driven, right? Whereas AI has an inference engine, and then you have a rule base. And so they're disconnected elements. And so the inference engine is like the executive function in your brain. And the rules are things like, hey, don't touch the stovetop, things like that. But sometimes you might have to for safety or other reasons, right? So you've got separation between your inference and your rules, and then you build your code around that. But what makes it easy is that you're not having to write these rules anymore. With procedural code, what makes it exhausting is you've got to write all of these things out. With AI, you teach it to think itself. And the software development lifecycle is shortened so much. And whenever you make a mistake, because you do, we've done this a bunch, where we get really wacky results. We're like, how did it possibly just go off the rails? Sometimes it's called hallucinations or whatever. So what you do is you just kill it and start again. And you retrain. So you can quash the model, restart again, and then see where it goes. You bring in a new condition, things go off the rails, kill it or retrain it with those new conditions. And it's so much faster and easier to teach software to teach itself. Because once it starts figuring it out and you get a base level of information, that's why I said you focus on your clean data, that 20% that drives 80% of the results at your company. That's the minority of your data. Focus on the minority, use that, leverage it as your training data, and then your AI will take it from there. And it starts making decisions to just a broader range of conditions than you could have imagined, and it takes it from there. It's not here to take over your company. It's a specialist, right? I have to credit my lovely bride for this. She was talking about Will.i.am and how he's using AI to help, like an assistant DJ. So it's not taking over his job, but it has access to a library of music and information immediately that we as humans don't have. But he still brings in the emotion. He still brings in the human qualities that make music what it is. There's going to be human qualities in what we build and what we do that no AI can ever emulate or take over.
So we've looked at all the positive benefits of using AI, but what are some of the risks involved with using AI?
Yeah. So I think we touched on this just a little bit here. One of the risks is if it goes outside of your building, right? If you're using public networks, your intellectual property starts to drift a little bit outside of it. The other risk that's in there, I think I mentioned, is hallucination, right? Where sometimes the AI starts making decisions that are just off track. Mm-hmm. So we talked about mitigating the first risk, which is keeping things within your building, within your network. And then the other thing is when AI is hallucinating, that's really important to get that feedback loop. And that's why it's a specialist, it's an advisor, it's part of your company, but it isn't running your company. It may be supporting your manager of operations, but it isn't telling them what to do. And so the risk is just getting a little too lazy, a little too complacent. But I liken that to trusting a spreadsheet. When someone sends me a spreadsheet or gives me some numbers, I'm like, cool, how did you get there? Just let me just spot check it. Does this make a reasonableness test? I don't have to recreate the math. It might be off a little bit here and again, but I just want to know, are we in the zone or not? And I think that feedback loop is really important to mitigate the risk of hallucinations. You just have to take a look at it, and you have to understand that AI is subordinate to you. It's not there to do everything for you. And I think that freedom of having a system that will do some elements of what you want to do, think of it for yourself. You're very creative, and yet you use AI. It just makes you more creative.
Yeah.
Run software allows us to be more human. It builds relationships, connections. That's why I pick on email. Like back in the day, I know email has like been around forever. If I had to write letters home to family, that's just a beating for me. Uh-huh. But email and then text, I can now build better relationships with people because it's just gotten that much easier. And that's really the best technology, is things that are very people, that enhances us being more human. And that's really what I think, that's another part of just understanding the role of AI within your company. And because it's so new, I think a lot of people are just uncertain as to where that fits in.
It's so funny when you talk about hallucinations, because when I first started using ChatGPT, when I first started using ChatGPT, I asked it to write a bio about me, and it came up with that I had a PhD from Harvard, and it was doing all this kind of crazy stuff. So now when I'm asking it to do stuff, I will say, write only based on what you actually know. Do not make stuff up. And the funny thing with chat is then it apologizes to you. I am so sorry for doing that.
That's hilarious. I love it.
But it is, because I'm like, why in the world did you write that? And it says, because most people who do what you do, I just went with the background that I thought that would make sense. Now you just have to coach it into saying, no, do not make stuff up. Okay, I won't make up stuff this time. So
It's
anyway.
like a child. That's hilarious. Dr. Lisa, that's what I got to call you from now on, with the Harvard
Yeah, there you
PhD.
go. There you go. As we're getting to the end of our time together, what did I not ask you that you wish I did, or what further information or tips do you have that would be that we did not cover so far?
Oh man, that's a tough question.
I know we talked about a lot.
Yeah, let me think about something here. Man, I feel like we covered a fair amount of ground. I'm just trying to think on some of my notes here. I'll tell you one thing is, because this is math-based, at least what we're talking about, we're seeing a lot of variability in supplier input costs, right? And some of it's due to war and crazy things happening around the world. Some of it is due to, so you're rerouting your shipments and things like that, right? So you've got these little weird kinks that occur within your supply chain, or you've got some sort of a beta in terms of pricing for your suppliers, among your suppliers. And so to me, when I think about this big sort of trends, I think it becomes more important to either A, have humans staying on top of these variability and supplier input costs and think about different ways to accomplish your purpose. That's one. Or number two, obviously, since we're talking AI, is to really start feeding that data into AI. And I know that sometimes people sign contracts that might be for a certain number of units over a certain period of time, and they have an agreed upon price. And so they're going to deliver at that price that's contractually agreed upon in their quote. But if their supplier input costs are continuously varying, the question becomes, hey, I'm seeing a good price for this. Do I stockpile a little bit? I know it goes against the whole just-in-time manufacturing idea, but I think that there is some value in intermediary warehousing or holding certain things. Buying, it's almost like you're hedging your bets, like Southwest Airlines did years ago when they agreed to buy fuel at a certain price. And then when the fuel prices soared, it looked like they were really smart because they had hedged on their contracts. But of course, once those contracts expired and now they're paying either a spot prices or market rate, or they're renewing their contracts for fuel, then obviously they go to parity with everybody else. But I think to me, that's an interesting thing that I think about a lot in terms of just macro trends, and like, how do we get a tool that will make recommendations for me in terms of how I'm accomplishing my mission? And I think back in the olden days, we used to have these elaborate spreadsheets of equivalent components and parts that when we reached end of life, or we heard announcements about end of life, or we heard some sort of quality issues with a particular lot, that we could start subbing out parts. That was such a beating because you had a group of people that would do that back in the day. And I just think, to me, this is a ripe opportunity for AIs to really look at those supplier input costs, your component costs, the things that comprise ultimately what you're selling your product for, or the margins that you achieve for the contracts that you have agreed upon to do for your sales. And customers continue to push for long-term contracts at locked-in prices, but they're trying to smooth out their acquisition costs. But as a manufacturer, your inputs are varying constantly. That's where, to me, where AI can be a pretty good tool for that.
Hey, if somebody wanted to continue the conversation with you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
So, a couple ways. I love a phone call. We're in Texas, so our number is 817-210-4042. If they just want to email me, I'll go ahead and put in my LinkedIn, but it's basically my LinkedIn is my first name, and I'll give you that profile. And of course, our website is iokasystems.com, AYOKA systems.com. And those are all great ways to reach me, but I love to learn what people love to do. And I think, to me, first and foremost, the calling is to serve. And so if I could be useful for just sharing thoughts or helping people wrap their head around it, that would be awesome. Because I love what people do. I think it's addictive when I hear what they do. And I hope that my enthusiasm is contagious too, because I think that there's just so much more that we can do in terms of just effectiveness with AI.
Wonderful. I know I have really enjoyed the conversation. So Ignat, thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lisa. Thanks for having me. This is pretty fun. I love it. I love your questions. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. All right. I'm Lisa Ryan, and this is the Manufacturers Network Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Manufacturers Network Podcast. Do me a favor and share this podcast with your friends and colleagues so we can grow this network and connect more fantastic folks just like you. You can either send your buddies to the website at manufacturers-network.com or share the Manufacturers Network Podcast on your LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you and your industry friends hang out. The bigger and faster we grow the network, the stronger and deeper the community we'll all have. Thanks again, and I appreciate you.